Hi, my name is Gary Barkalow. In this conversation, you're going to hear the stories, the journeys of four men into their purpose or calling. It's not because our stories are extraordinary that we're sharing them, but God's work in our stories is extraordinary, as His work is in you. As you listen, pay close attention to the patterns that emerge in this unscripted conversation between friends. And pay close attention to your own heart. One of the greatest means of understanding our own story is by listening to the stories of others. You see, while every person's story is very unique, the human heart is universal. At the end of this conversation, I'll come back and offer some additional observations and teaching. Craig, how old are you right now?
I just turned 55.
Okay. Bart?
I'm just a couple of 3 weeks into 56.
Can I do mine over again? I'm 55 years young.
John, what about you?
I just turned 47.
Okay. And I am just about to turn 52. So, Craig, give us a...
But Craig is a granddad.
Bart just wants to keep that clear here.
That's right.
Jeez, I feel like we're a bunch of old guys here.
So at this stage in your life, at this place in your journey, how would you describe your calling? Bart, you want to start?
Yeah. You know, Gary, as you asked that question, I mean, I think over my story, and I think I've done a lot of things to try to get to that where I am today. And God still defining what that calling is. But as I see that today, I really feel like my strength, my desire takes me to the place of relationships. And what that specifically means is speaking into the lives of people, mostly in the context of one-on-one. However, I'm growing and doing that in numbers now, and I love that. But I think it's mostly relational as I look back over what I did, the successes that I had in life, the successes in business, the things that really gave me a lot of satisfaction. So I would sum it up very succinctly, Gary, is just saying I really think my strength is relationships. And today at Ransomed Heart, that really has just got great form and great satisfaction as I get to go out and pursue people, you know, one-on-one and sometimes in small groups. And when we do that together on mission, I love that as well.
Mm-hmm. Relationships and speaking into their life.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you're looking for, right?
The
relationship creates mm-hmm. the context.
Right. Exactly.
To bring clarity, right?
Right.
To bring God. I mean, that's where I see you most alive.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Those are the stories you like to tell.
Right.
Hey, you won't believe this conversation I had with this guy today.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it just happened a few days ago. I'd known this guy for a long time. It took me a long time relationally to get to this point to speak into his life. But it was just almost like an epiphany for him. And his life says, that's it. That's where I want to go. And
you brought clarity to him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that brings a great deal of satisfaction to me. That's very rewarding to me.
Yeah. Those are the stories you tell.
Yeah.
You know, that's pretty revealing.
Yeah. You know, I'd say with me, my understanding of my calling at this point is that I want to help people understand and own their life in a larger story. I want them to walk with God intimately and conversationally. In other words, I want them to seize their life and the moment in life, to do that intentionally with clarity, with focus, design, with intentionality. That's what I want to do for people and with people.
And so what drives you crazy is when people have no idea who they are or mm-hmm. what they're supposed to do with their life.
Right.
Right?
Oh, I've got this drive to bring clarity. Well, the other thing that drives me crazy is not only that, but when someone wants to find more clarity, but there is no sense of intentionality about their life. In other words, it's just senses they're not going to do anything different with it anyway.
Yeah.
They just want the information.
Yeah.
that leaves me very unsettled.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know,
Gary, I think we could all say, and I know for me specifically, that your calling has—I've been a beneficiary of that because
right.
you've given me a lot of good direction in my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks.
Those are all the questions you ask when we're sitting around chatting. The kinds of questions you ask are the questions that bring clarity,
mm-hmm.
right? So why are you doing that? Or you'll ask a question, you know, 20 years ago, you used to be really, you know, you used to love theater. How come you don't do that anymore? What's that about? Where'd
yeah.
that go? You're always pushing into that, even in informal moments.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh, even if I don't speak it, I'm thinking that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just where I go instantly with somebody.
See, that's just really, really crucial. I mean, in terms of – we're going to get more into this. But in terms of sort of discovering your calling, knowing how you're wired, just what do you do?
Yeah.
On duty and off duty.
Yeah.
You know, where do you just tend to always go?
Yeah.
Right? And for Gary, it's asking questions that bring clarity to life,
mm-hmm.
clarity to purpose, clarity to mission.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Craig?
Yeah. You know, my calling, I think the way I'd put it, Gary, is to live a certain way, and the effect of that life would be the people are shepherded by me, the people hear a message from me,
yep.
Over the course of time, and that message comes through words, through writing, and through just my being with them in the journey. So I think I'm a shepherd who has a message, and God's opening up doors either through speaking or through writing to share that message.
That's good.
That is good.
Boy, that's... That sounds like more clarity than you've had.
Like 2 days ago. Yeah, it does.
Yeah,
it is.
That's good, Craig.
Yeah. Very true.
I look forward to unpacking this.
Yeah, yeah. That's really yeah. good.
John, how about you? How would you describe your calling right now?
Well, my calling is to be a warrior and to raise up other warriors. To fight for people's hearts, to fight for the heart and, you know, kind of generally in the church, this is central, this is important, we got to get this back, but then very specifically to fight for people's hearts personally, but then to raise up warriors to do that as well. And in particular, men. My calling is to rescue men and bring them in as warriors into this battle.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's true. It's what you're doing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, obviously, we stated our calling with the clarity of a 47-year-old or a 52-year-old or a 55, 56-year-old. We have certain clarity now that we did not have earlier in our life. So what I would like to do is trace several threads through our stories which have brought us to this point of understanding. But in order to do this, I think we need to start with our context, our history. So let's first begin by sharing a quick synopsis of our history through the decades of our life, beginning in our 20s.
Yeah, it's important for people to hear the journey that you're asking about, because the kind of clarity that we just named, you know, has taken place because of unfolding events.
Yeah.
And I didn't always have that. I didn't have that when I was 21.
Yeah. You know. Craig, would you like to go first?
Yeah, great. I came to Christ at 21. Maybe that's the place to start. Dramatic conversion, the whole hippie drug thing. Came to Christ through Calvary Chapel. And I just knew at that moment that I wanted my life to be in full service of Christ for what he had done for me. I didn't want to work in a warehouse. I didn't want to be teaching history. I didn't want to be a businessman. I just wanted to share the good news of Christ. And rather quickly, like in about 3 months' time, I was kind of pastoring a group of ex-hippies, people on some state of trying to get free from drugs.
3 months into your Christian life.
I think I was still having flashbacks then, but nonetheless, there I was. And I bumped into an old friend who hired me in a part-time job as a janitor in a traditional church. And so as I was working in this house, this communal house, working as a janitor, I was encouraged to go to college, eventually seminary, and I went from janitor to a college pastor in this church, and then college and singles, and then adult education. So that was my 20s. Finished seminary and went to another church and was pastor to married adults, and then created a ministry strategy that changed my position to overseeing all adult ministry. I was the life stage pastor. And then I took on the role of kind of the pastor of the pastors. And so about 28 years as a pastor in one form or another. And then the last 5 years I've been here at Ransomed Heart.
Bart?
Yeah, my 20s began 1971. As I kind of look at the sequential events that really affected my life,
I was 11 in 1971.
Well, I just learned how to fly, and all of a sudden my dad unexpectedly and suddenly dies, which had a profound effect on my life. Went off to University of Texas, got a business degree in marketing. Was recruited by Exxon, kind of made a pragmatic decision to stay in Texas and pursue my career there. After 3 years of kind of losing heart, went on a vacation to California, met a builder out there who made me an offer, and so resigned from my position at Exxon, moved to California, field assignment to in the office contracting, and then it moved toward kind of a relational role of entitlement in that company. Left that builder, went to work for another one. That took me to Houston to start a company there.
That's, so, Bart, is this all in your 20s right now?
All in my 20s. Oh, uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah,
wow.
It was a pretty active year, decade for me. Where I met Tana. Then on Christmas Eve of that year, that builder fired me unexpectedly. So we went back to California and I got married and went to work for another builder. And then that's when I came to Christ at the age of 29. And then the whole industry, building industry, just tanked. That was the 20s. Then in the 30s, we started our company, Shantana Development. Very challenging time. And I was in kind of the relational side of that business.
How old were you when you started Shantana?
I was about 31.
Holy cow.
Or,
wow.
Yeah, 30, 31.
And how long did you do that for?
About 20 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, yeah. Most of the 80s were very successful. We did just project after project, just really had a lot of success. And so during this decade, I became active in the church with my faith, became active with Christian boards and nonprofits. And that characterized a lot of that, of walking and growing in my faith along with the business that I had. And then the market took another turn at the end of the 80s, and times got very challenging, which now I go to my 40s. Boy, we lost a lot of money. It was very hard times. We worked very hard. We built a lot of projects just to get out of trouble. Built them for the bank. We worked hard to preserve the relationships that we had from contractors, subcontractors, and banks and lenders and those kinds of things. For about 3 or 4 years there, we didn't get a paycheck, you know, very challenging times. It was at this point I got back into flying. As we kind of worked ourselves out of all of these problems, then we started a new company developing self-storage. It was a hard startup, but we did pretty well. And this was the time, John, when you called me and said, Bart, hey, would you host this retreat for you and Brent for Sacred Romance?
Oh, yeah.
And
1998.
Yeah. Yeah. And then that kind of opened that whole thing up that led me and drew me in towards Ransomed Heart with a board involvement. Then kind of the end of my 40s was my third back surgery, then Guillain-Barré. And then it turned to my 50s, which I left my building career, came to Ransomed Heart, became a part of this team and involved today in development of donor relations and doing the missions with you guys. So that's kind of brings me from the 20s to 56.
Yeah, it's amazing to hear it in an overview like that.
John, how about you?
Let's see. Early 20s, I was still going to college, working part-time as a janitor in a church as well. And then I started – my undergraduate degree was in theater. I had a dream of being an actor and in theater in Los Angeles. And so I started a theater company in my 20s, stage company in Los Angeles. Had an absolute ball. Loved it. And did that through most of my 20s. Those are great years. And then end of my 20s, just a series of events kind of took me out of that. And I got into public policy, policy analysis, that sort of thing, and went to Washington, D.C. That was right at the end of my 20s and into being 30. And did that for 3 years, woke up one day to realize I can't do this anymore. And really wanted to go to grad school. Really, when I came to Christ, like Craig, I came in out of the drug culture, that whole thing. I was 19. You were 19 as well?
21.
21. Like Craig, it was a huge impact on my life. I mean, I wasn't raised in the church. I didn't have anything like that. So I always had this real strong desire that I want to be in ministry. I want to – and at that time, I kind of thought the only way you can do that is be a pastor. So I thought I was going to go to seminary. Where I ended up going in my 30s was still working at Focus on the Family, supporting a wife and three kids, but I wanted to go to grad school. And so I went to get my graduate degree in counseling and under Larry Crabb and Dan Allender. And toward the end of my 30s, it's really kind of the decade of awakening and getting my heart back. That's when I met Brent Curtis. We wrote The Sacred Romance together, graduated from grad school, doing a little bit of counseling, writing, speaking, and right up to the end of my 30s there. And then into my 40s was when I really began to take writing seriously. I kind of fell into it with Brent. I mean, he just suggested, you know, let's write a book over the literally a cup of coffee one morning, and I just loved it. And so wrote Journey of Desire, wrote Wild at Heart. Wild at Heart, early in my 40s, just launched all of this, you know, and I was speaking to men, and that's when we started Ransomed Heart, was about 7 years ago. So I'd be right there at 40. So the last 7 years of my 40s here has been Ransomed Heart. And its development and the books and the mission and you guys coming together and all of that.
Fascinating.
It is how different our stories are.
It really is.
In my 20s, I was at college, went to a small college in Georgia, and went there really just because I wanted to be under a certain gymnastics coach, this man from Japan, and really went there primarily for that reason, with also the goal to get a business degree when I left, which I did. I was there in college. I was also 19 when I became a Christian, but it was there I became a Christian. My senior year, I just sensed that God wanted me to go into this ministry with Campus Crusade for Christ called Athletes in Action, something really I didn't want to do. The outset, my father really didn't want me to do it. He sent me off to college to make money, to get a job, but went in on to staff with Campus Crusade for Christ, Athletes in Action, and I was with them for 15 years after that point. Kind of came on as a performing gymnast, performing and sharing my faith, and a couple of years into that, then I started to run a gymnastics center and develop one for them. So now into my 30s. Into my 30s, we decided to drop the gymnastics center, and now we have moved from Southern California, where we had the Gymnastic Center, to Colorado Springs. There we developed this ministry with sports teams. We sent sports teams of all different types around the world to perform and share their faith. And the reason we came to Colorado Springs was to be near the Olympic Training Center. So during that time out here, I was helping develop that ministry. I was asked to start a cycling ministry, which I knew nothing about, but simply just get it started. It's a worldwide sport.
I never knew that.
Did that, yep. It was also during that time I was asked if I would coordinate our teams in the continent of Africa. So I would do frequent trips over there, meeting with staff and sports federation people. And then after a while, I was asked if I would simply lead this whole sports teams ministry in Colorado Springs. And then, also in my 30s, that was the end of the 15 years with Campus Crusade for Christ, I then went with Focus on the Family, also into public policy. I was asked to come along and help develop these organizations that they had started, associate organizations, and see them go further along as an organization. And then after several years, I was asked if I would head up that department of public policy. Okay, then in my 40s, I was still with Focus on the Family and public policy, but it was in my 40s that John then left the public policy division of Focus on the Family to go to a different part. And I was asked if I would take on his department as well as mine and started this conglomerate department called Legislative and Cultural Affairs, and did that for a number of years. And during those years, also, I started another organization with a friend of mine called Halftime Journey. And then also in my 40s, I was asked if I would lead up staff development for Focus on the Family. And then it was during my 40s that I left Focus and came with Ransomed Heart. And that's where I am today, into my 50s. I heard things in each of your stories that I haven't heard before, or at least remember, and things that I didn't know where they fell into the journey of your life. That was really helpful. That was really good. You know, I'm remembering that Paul said that God is at work in us, both in giving us the desire to do what he wants us to do, as well as the ability. And so let's go back into our stories now and trace desire through our stories. So, John, with you, why don't you go ahead and start kind of this journey?
Yeah, okay. So desire is the first category. Okay. Yeah. When I ever since I was little, I wanted to be in the theater. When I was a little boy, up into my teens, my mom would take me to the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. And it awakened a desire in me to speak, to be up front, on stage, to present, to bring a message. And I think that's important that I add that to my calling, by the way, that I'm a messenger as well. Mm-hmm. I would add that. And I thought it was through the theater. I loved the stage. I loved acting. And so in my 20s, my desire was very clear to me. It was keen. It was acute. I was living in it. You know, my undergraduate degree in college, I pursued a theater major. I started a theater company. Stacy and I did theater together. We had a little fellowship of actors, this community of Christian actors, and we were doing this in Los Angeles and loving it. The story of my 20s, though, is a story of loss of desire. There were some painful things that happened in the theater company. There was some wounding that took place there, some betrayal in some relationships against us. We were very, very hurt. I was very, very wounded. And I really lost heart because of that. And at the same time, about 28, fear came in because Stacy wanted to have children. And so I said, I got to make a living, you know, and you don't make a living in theater, you know, just like most people don't make a living, you know, being a musician, though it may be their heart's desire. Unfortunately, I gave way to fear. I lost heart, lost desire through wounding, and then fear just said, I just got to go get a good job. And so I fell into public policy, and it was largely out of the desire for validation. Mm-hmm. You know, I looked to an older man to say, help me think through my life. What should I do? And he said, well, you're really sharp. You're really bright. You're good at policy type analysis. And I did. I was interested in those things. I read Francis Schaeffer. I love philosophy. You know, there was that part of me that was very true. You know, and I would read, you know, analysis of current events and that kind of thing and enjoyed it. So he said, you got to go to Washington, D.C. So out of a desire for validation, I found myself in D.C. And the interesting part of that journey is one of the worst things about the false self is when it works for you. You know, George MacDonald says that without Christ, men must fail miserably or succeed even more miserably. You know, that it worked for me for a couple of years. I mean, I was smart and I was on top of things and I was driven and, you know, I'm wearing suits and starched shirts and ties and all of that and trying to make life work for me. I'd lost a huge part of my heart through desire. And what happened in the 30s was the first misery. I hate my life. I can't do this anymore. I just woke up one day to realize I don't desire this. I don't desire to be in D.C. I had this meeting in the White House and I was a policy analyst invited to go to this high-level meeting. And I left the meeting thinking, okay, that's the peak Washington experience right there. I mean, you just been in the West Wing. You know, you're somebody, right? You're hobnobbing with pretty important people, cabinet officials. You know, I couldn't have cared less. And I realized, okay, this is not my desire. I can't do this anymore. And so I began to pursue, what is my desire? What is it that I do want? And a friend asked me a very interesting question. He said, so when you go into the bookstore, do you go to the policy, politics, analysis, current affairs section? And I laughed and I said, no, I never read those books anymore. And he says, well, where do you go? And I say, well, to the soul. Mm. I read things on the heart. I read things on the human soul. And I let myself dream a little bit. I let my desires resurface. And they didn't take me back into theater. Where my desires really went was I want a graduate degree in counseling. I want to be with people. I really want to go for the heart. And I think part of that just came out of losing my own heart, losing my own way, you know, because I'd lost heart. And so I began in the 30s. You know, the 20s was sort of – at the end of the 20s, I lost heart, lost desire. 30s is reawakening. The reawakening of desire. And then from that point, about 35, I think I was 35 when I entered grad school, till this day, the last 12 years has just been greater and greater and greater passion, clarity, momentum as I realize, yes, I do love this. It is the heart. Yes, it is, you know, fighting for people. And so grad school helped clarify that. And I went to grad school knowing I don't necessarily want to have a career as a professional counselor, but I want this knowledge. Mm-hmm. I want – it's close. You know what I mean? It was close. It's like I don't want to be a counselor, but I want the heart. I want to – you know. And then the irony of the writing thing is, as I mentioned, was you know, Brent just tossed it out over a cup of coffee one morning sitting downtown here in Colorado Springs. So we started writing this book together. And I think that's where the theater piece reemerged. I think storytelling, I think bringing a compelling message, bringing it in a beautiful way, all that creativity came back. So now I got the creativity back, right? And I've got the story back, right? And storytelling. But now it's about something important. Now it's about the heart. So I was able to kind of bring those two things together. And I sort of fell into my calling. It's really the honest thing is that now I love writing. I love this message. I love bringing this message. I love fighting for people's hearts. And so into my 40s, the journey with Ransomed Heart has just been one of more clarity and obviously battling for that and that sort of thing. But desire reawakened in my 30s and honed almost to a knife edge in my 40s.
John, tell that story about the time you and Craig were doing a Sacred Romance conference and you were sitting kind of up in the balcony at that point as Craig was speaking. And
yeah, that's wild that you remember that because I just remembered it too the other day. I don't know what I was watching. I was watching something on TV and it brought it all back. Okay. So the honing of desire and the reawakening and the coming together of these things. Craig and I, before we started Ransomed Heart officially – After Brent's death, I was still doing sacred romance conferences, but obviously alone, and I didn't want to work alone. And so I asked Craig if he could come out from L.A. time to time, meet me in, you know, Cincinnati or Atlanta, and we'd do these conferences together. So we were doing a sacred romance conference in Denver, and Craig was speaking, so I was off and had I went upstairs in the upper balcony. I was watching the conference from above, and we had these really cool banners, and they were sort of Elizabethan, these tapestries that we would bring in as part of our just sort of set for the set of mood. Mm-hmm. And we had these huge candelabras with real candles lit, and we were kind of creating a mood for the conference. And I was watching this, and I realized, God, you did give me my heart's desire. I thought it was acting. And to be honest, I thought it was Shakespearean acting. There was a time in my life where I was convinced I was going to go to London and go to the Royal Academy and be a Shakespearean actor. And I'm looking at this going, it's happened. What I wanted to bring beauty and life and truth and a message, all of it's happened. Mm-hmm. But in this way, mm-hmm. and frankly, in a much better way. I mean, mm-hmm. I miss the theater a little bit. I think I might do it in my retirement or something, you know. doesn't Justice Rehnquist, the former Supreme Court Justice, he was like in a community theater thing. That's what he did on his weekends as Supreme Court Justice. But anyway, it was the fulfillment of a desire, you know, in a way that I never thought it would come around again, mm-hmm. you know. Huh. That's the story,
that's a good story
of desire in my life.
Yeah. Well, and sitting back and listening to this, looking at your life, the thread is so large, so traceable.
Yes, it is.
You know, it's just – it's clear as can be.
It is. Oh, it's pretty crazy how clear it is. I mean, yeah. You know, when I was in kindergarten, we did a little play, and I was given the only speaking role. All the other kids were animals, and I was the only speaking role. When I was in second grade, I was chosen by my second grade teacher to be the narrator of the school play. Right? So I had the major speaking role. I mean, just there's this trajectory, you know, that's all in this direction. Bring a message, lead, speak, bring – yeah.
Yeah.
And look at you now. Among a group of animals with the speaking.
I even remember my line. Right this way, ladies, gents, buy your tickets, just 10 cents. That's kindergarten.
But it was just as good back then, the way you said it. That's great.
Desire. Bart, trace desire.
Yeah, John is I really think it kind of came to me before I was a Christian, and God was speaking to me really through adventure and through work. But I think God began to speak to me as I loved flying. I mean, flying began to define a lot of the adventure of my life when I was a little kid, just my desire to go there. And when I was in my early 20s, or kind of the late teens, early 20s, I learned how to fly. And boy, it was just something transcendent about that, even though I wasn't a Christian. That just spoke very deeply to me. And then my dad died, and I just walked away from all of that. It just all went to sleep. And I think my life just went to just work. And I did get a lot of satisfaction. I think God spoke to that part of my life of just working hard, although a lot of brokenness was attached to that. I think some desire was attached to that. And I think as I came through this period of my life, out of my brokenness, a lot of it was just work hard. Whatever you do, just work hard. And that's how you'll get ahead. That's how you will get satisfaction out of life. But it really didn't work. After graduated from the University of Texas, I chose a job that I didn't like, didn't want, but it was a very pragmatic decision to stay in Texas. And I think I listened to the advice of a lot of people that looked at my opportunities and said, well, you ought to do that. And I just listened to that. And after 3 years—
Okay, pause. How many men, myself included, your story, forsake desire for safety and for money.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You went there
right.
because it was secure.
Right.
It was security
yeah.
in a job.
Yeah.
Right? And you gave up some core desires, which I know you're going to get back to in a minute here, but I just had to point that out because
right.
it's a killer. That's how I went to D.C.
Right.
Security. Right. Security.
Well, and isn't another word for money validation? I mean, isn't that what lies beneath so much
yeah.
of what we're really pursuing?
Yeah.
Yeah. And Gary, as you asked that question, I think I had to go so distantly far away from desire in order to begin to reach it, because at the end of those 3 years with Exxon, my heart was so dead in what I did. I hated it. I detested my days. I counted the hours, and I worked long hours because I kept the discipline of work.
Mm-hmm.
I was very successful at it. I got three promotions, and they said, man, you're on the fast track of this company. And inside, I just felt empty with all of that. And I went off on a vacation to California and met with a builder. And just in the course of a conversation over lunch, he says, hey, if you want to come out, I'll give you a start. It'll be in the field and it basically a laborer's job. My heart was so dead that I went back and resigned from this incredible job, career path, you know, company car, expense account, all of that stuff for a young man in his 20s. And I went to the bottom of a sewer manhole with a shovel in my hand, digging a ditch in about a 3-week period.
Why?
I just wanted something that would bring me to life. And I think what was connected to that was the validation of the building business, because my dad was a builder.
You wanted to get into the building business.
Yes, yes. And so came to California and started at the very bottom and worked my way up into the office contracting job. That wasn't it. I'm not that detail-minded, but I did that for a year or so. And then kind of the relational side of the business of kind of opened up to me, and I really stepped into that of the entitlement process, fighting the environmental battles. And it's a very relational thing, and it has to do with relationships that you have to develop to win these battles in this business. And I love that. I really did. And so take you to my 30s. We started our own company, from working for others to starting others. That piqued something in me. There was a spike in desire at that time and a great satisfaction in my life and a lot of validation that I got from starting my own company. And I was moving deeper and deeper into the relational side of the business. That really became my baby instead of sharing it with somebody else in the company. That was what I did. That was given to me. And so those relationships that I formed in our company brought us great success, brought us a lot of projects, brought us a lot of victories in the environmental battles, brought us a lot of just opportunity through those relationships. And that was very fulfilling to me. And then go to the 40s. And a desire returns to me, you know, in my kind of mid to late 40s that I never thought would ever come, when my flying came back to me.
Huh.
We went to an auction for a nonprofit, and one of the items that was being bid for was Buffalo Burgers and Catalina, come fly a little Cessna over there. And a guy took us over there. So I bid on this thing, got it. And so Tana and I went over and went to Catalina back. And when I got out of that airplane, I just walked around that airplane, and she could see that. She said, what's wrong with you? I said, oh, man, I forgot how much I love this.
Huh.
And so she said, well, why aren't you doing it? And there was really no reason. I had the capacity in my life to do it. I just had resigned myself to the fact that I would never do it again.
Yeah.
Just this living in resignation. And so within the next day, I went and enrolled in flight school, got my license current again. Within 30 days, I owned an airplane. And there was something deep and profound about that in my life. And then my 50s, I think desire really came into much clearer focus. And it really had to do with you guys. When we were at that board retreat and the strategy retreat for Ransom Heart, and on the porch, you guys asked me, hey, Bart, what is it that makes you come alive?
Yeah.
And that's when it became clear at that time. I didn't have to think about it. It just was clear. You said, what is it that makes you come alive? And I said, well, I love to fly, and I love relationships. I love to connect with people. And as a result of that, and the invitation of coming into Ransomed Heart Ministries, I'm realizing a desire that for decades, I just didn't know what it was, but today it has great clarity, and I know there's more.
Mm-hmm.
There's more
mm-hmm.
that is still yet undefined.
Yeah. It's so good to know each other's stories, because there's another really important piece to your story, and that is you did not have permission to desire for years.
Right.
Because of the Christianity you were living
mm-hmm.
in,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, the Christianity you were living in, the church, the, you know, you were an elder at your church,
right.
all of that, it was very much duty.
Right.
And so desire wasn't a valid category.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And that's why it didn't blossom until pretty late in life for
right.
me.
Right, exactly.
Because it kind of came in the context of this, you just work hard.
Yeah.
And you're not supposed to enjoy. That's only reserved for maybe the 1%.
Yeah.
And I never thought I'd ever be in that 1%. Yeah. So.
I mean, you're a passionate man, and finding desire is not real difficult for you, but you weren't given permission
right.
for what, 30 years mm-hmm. of your Christian life?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And what strikes me, Bart, about your story is what you loved in the development business, you discovered was relational work.
Right.
Not the detail, tracking detail, but it's relational.
Right. Yep.
And that's where you started to come alive, and you knew this is where I need to stay. This is where I'm going to have an effect. And so I'm struck by that. I'm also struck by the connection between your love for flying and your love for connecting with people at a deep level, because if you could not fly your own airplane, you couldn't do what you're doing today.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't.
Yeah.
I mean, you're seeing people in 5 different states in a week and a half. You couldn't do that.
Yeah. It's a beautiful marriage of desire.
It is amazing. And you just talk about all the time that meeting with people makes you come alive. You
mm-hmm.
love it. And you get in your airplane, and that's rejuvenating for
right.
you as well.
Right. Poor Tana, you know, she says, stop. We have to stop. You know? And I feel energized by it.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing, Bart, that strikes me is the way you connect with people, the way you bring them perspective and clarity could not be done without the relationship that you so easily develop with them.
Mm-hmm.
That's a context for what you bring.
Right.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Craig, what about you? How do you trace desire in your story?
Yeah. I think I can trace back, as far as my memory allows me, to being a young boy and being the life of the party. And I see how being the life of the party would describe so much of what I've done and who I am. But it wasn't all just about some false self of being the comic and kind of some self-centered or narcissistic thing. Looking back, I realized so much of my life has been about bringing life
yep.
to a group of people.
Yep.
And in its immature, in its wounded, and in its false self manner, it's been being the life of the party. But I think one of the deep desires that I can trace through my life is bringing life. And as the years have gone by, it's a life of joy. And when I became a Christian, I think I got a taste of that through Christ, the power of the gospel. My life was changed. And I just knew that what I had, I wanted others to have.
Yeah, bring
life. This
was life.
Powerful. This
yeah.
is real. This is good. And in those early years, it was simply proclaiming the gospel to anyone who would hear. And then through the church I was working at, I brought collegians together. Our church didn't have a college group, so I created one and brought the gospel as I was part-time janitor to these collegians, and they came alive. The staff noticed, and they kind of kept pushing me into other circles and opportunities to bring life, to create life. And eventually to the point where they recommended that I go to seminary or into college. And what's funny was I never had the desire to be a pastor. That was never on my radar. And for years, being a pastor, I just thought it was ironic that I am one, because all I really ever wanted to do was just bring life. But somewhere in the course of my formal training, biblically and theologically, something got lost. My heart, my focus, and I think so much of what I brought was the very thing that repulsed me later, was just duty, obligation, pressure, shame and contempt, and just to get people to understand the word of God so that they would obey it. And in obeying it, they would find life. And I lost it in the process. And you know, I think in truth, I always kind of – there was some part of me that knew that.
Yeah.
But this is the way you're supposed to go, formally trained, do church this way. And I just remember in my office, people would be doing all the programs and everything that we provided as a church, and life would go bad and sour, and they didn't have a clue how to handle it. God was nowhere. It was as if he didn't exist. And something in me just cried out that this is wrong, and I want the real thing. I want it. I want them to have it. And somewhere buried in me was the desire for something authentic and real. Mm-hmm. And so all this is happening in my 20s, very early 30s. And my desire was for life. My life, the party I was attending had no life.
And the party you were throwing.
Yeah, the party I was throwing, it was a dud. And I wanted something. I got directed, to make a long story short, to a Larry Crabb and Dan Allender conference that just rocked my world. And I began to realize there were internal issues. I came alive. I mean, it was like I was a man who hadn't had a drink of water for ages, lapped it up. I was convicted, hopeful, excited. Here it was again. What I'd had at my conversion and lost, God brought back. And I just, this was it. A message of life, of joy, of freedom, a journey, not of pressure and obligation, but a journey where we live. And I began as a pastor at that point on now to listen to people. I just wanted to hear their story, and I just wanted to share it. I wanted to lift things off of them. And I would say that in the two churches I was at, my 20s and my 30s, that message wasn't received. It wasn't endorsed from the pulpit. The senior pastor had issues with kind of a message of freedom and hope and grace. And Gary, looking back, I can see desire driving me. But at the time, it felt more like misery. I just knew I could no longer work in a church setting that just preached the gospel of oppression and law and legalism. I had to leave because I desired something else. But I wouldn't have said that then.
Yeah, it was just misery at that point.
Yeah.
Misery.
Yeah.
Misery. And so my desire, what drove me, and this is easier to see looking back, is I want to make a difference. I want to bring life to people through counseling, through teaching, or kind of just pastoring people. The thing that I love is sitting down with someone and just lifting the weight of the traditional religious spirit off of them and just setting them free, encouraging them as a father, as an older man. You don't need that. Drop that. Leave that behind too. Mm-hmm. And just lighting their load. When I spoke with John at the Ransomed Heart, I think I've said before, it was like a deja vu. There I was, a mega church pastor who saw very little fruit in this church, speaking to a couple hundred people, the message that rang true to me. And I felt like I'd been there before, deja vu, but I hadn't. I just felt like this is it. I'm preaching, I'm speaking, I'm living a life that I want to live that will set people free.
It was the party you used to be at when you first became a Christian.
Bringing life,
wow,
to a party people. And that's my desire, is bring life, bring joy. And now I find myself enjoying writing in a way that's embarrassing to say, but is deeply and profoundly true for me. I love to write. I love to write about the life that we can have in the journey, in the humor and the grace and the power and the surprising presence of God. I'd like to make people laugh and smile and go, aha, and give them hope and lift the weight. And at this age, it feels all very young and new and true and exciting to be a messenger in writing.
Yeah, Craig, you've given me a couple of things, just little snippets of things you've written. And, oh, man, I mean, all of that rings true. I mean, it just brought such joy, laughter, but most of all, just life. And I think you're onto something incredible.
I just want to go ding, 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 ding. You are describing an embarrassment of how much you want this to be true of you. I just want people to hear that, because it will help them find their joy. Right? That what is that thing that you're almost ashamed to admit? You know, what I really want to do is I just want to teach basketball. You know, what I really want to do, you know, I just want to, what is it? Lead missions trips. I don't want to do this, you know, dental work anymore. I just want to lead people around the world. And that piece is so important to this, because desire, when you get close to the heart's desire, it feels scary, nervous, embarrassing, you know?
And sometimes untrue.
Well, you're afraid it's not
true. It's so important to you, right? You're afraid you might discover it's untrue, or someone would actually laugh at it or doubt it.
Oh, you're close then.
Yeah.
I just want to say, you know, you are really close.
Yeah.
Yep.
And Craig, you're in tears right now. Why?
Yeah, it's everything you guys said. I want it so badly, but I'm so afraid it won't be true.
Yes, yeah.
And then you're just so far out there exposed as a fraud and pipe dreamer and all of that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a gift to our listeners. When you're this close, you know, it's going to feel like all of that. I'm afraid it's not true. I'm afraid I can't have that. I'm afraid, you know, I'm kidding myself. But it is true.
Yeah.
Yeah, it certainly is.